People flocking to the YouTube stream today in record numbers, wanting our reaction to all the goings-on yesterday regarding the trade deadline. We have spent the vast majority of the show talking about that, and there's a pit in my stomach, some existential dread, because I know after Chris Carter, we're going to get back into it. We've got Noah Hyles at the bottom of the hour. A texter makes a really good point. Harry's so depressed today. I have never seen Harry like this. Harry, I mean, he'll fall asleep during breaks, things of that nature, but Harry is a ball of energy, typically. Why is Harry so depressed? His favorite team just got David Bednar.
That is true. I didn't even think about that.
Are you going to buy a David Bednar Yankees jersey, Harry?
No.
Player tee.
It doesn't feel right, and I do. I root for the Yankees on the American League side. It doesn't feel right. It just doesn't.
Meanwhile, the Steelers moved practice up yesterday to 10 a.m., they have Friday Night Lights tonight. Chris Carter's been there with the Post-Gazette to cover it all, and we'll get into the sights and sounds of training camp. First, Chris, good morning to you, my friend, our friend. How you doing today?
I'm all right, fellas. How y'all doing today?
So brighten our spirits. A, should the Steelers make a play for Terry McLaurin? B, what would you give up if you're trying to get Terry McLaurin?
Should they? They should inquire. They should try to look into it. I just don't think there's going to be a reasonable middle ground for these two teams, because Omar Khan, with all the moves, all the aggression we have seen as far as, you know, going and trading for Jaden Ramsey, going and getting all the things they've gotten, they're not giving up any 2026 draft picks because they're that concerned about trying to trade up and get that quarterback and capitalize on this upcoming class. And I feel like if you're going to trade for Terry McLaurin, that's something that you're going to give up. The only way I could see this possibly happening is if, like, the Commanders are so desperate and they'll take, like, okay, we'll take, you know, a Pat Freiermuth swap. But I'm not sure the Steelers would do that because he's 30 years old and Pat Freiermuth is younger than that. I find a hard time. I think that this is going to end up a lot like how Myles Garrett ended up. You know, the Commanders, they just made it to the NFC Championship game. Terry McLaurin is born and bred through their system, and they have a young quarterback who was great with him last year. Why would you separate them? You have the cap space. Pay that man. I know he's 30, and he'll be 30 in, you know, October or whatever, and that's a tricky question. Pay that man right now. You got him with Jaden Daniels. You got a chance to make the Super Bowl. I think the Commanders are going to do it, and it won't be much of an issue down the line.
Chris, we've kicked this question around the last couple of days, and you know, okay, we all have our certain thoughts on it. What do you think, from being up there and seeing, you know, training camp and practice up close and personal, what do you think the Steelers' offensive identity wants to be this year?
It's going to be a mixed balance of a lot of different things. Aaron Rodgers, I think, has allowed Arthur Smith to be more complex in the alignments that he's setting up than I've seen, that I've studied of him since his time with the Steelers last year, Atlanta before that, and Tennessee before that. They're still going to try to be a team that runs the football, but you're seeing this team line up, come out an empty set, but with three wide receivers and two tight ends, and then they'll motion guys around, and then all of a sudden, Jonnu Smith's lining up, you know, in the shotgun right next to Aaron Rodgers and getting ready to take a handoff. They are going to throw so many different alignments at you because they want to trust Aaron Rodgers. When I asked Jonnu Smith about, you know, all the different things and how he's helping, he said Aaron Rodgers is a coach on the field. He sees things. We all trust him. They're going to allow him to get a lot of leeway. Now, that doesn't mean the Steelers are going to be pass happy, but I do think that they're going to be a team that tries to exploit more mismatches and alignments this year and trust that Aaron Rodgers is going to be able to capitalize on it, whereas the past several years, even before Arthur Smith, they really didn't trust their quarterbacks because the quarterbacks didn't prove trustworthy.
How's Aaron Rodgers coming along? I know there were some, you know, communication issues, some, how would I put this? Just DK Metcalf. Rhythm issues, rust issues. Yeah, thank you.
I mean, it was rough the first, like, week or so. Yesterday was his best practice. I mean, he hit some deep balls. He was reading the defense. And what was funny was Wednesday was the first day in pads. The defense just tore it up. They it was bad. The whole offense was like, we got to be better. And when we talked to DK Metcalf yesterday, he was like, no. After Wednesday, we all got together. We like, we cannot let this happen a second day in a row. And the offense came out, and while they didn't dominate, they did make it a more back and forth approach. There were lots of scraps. Jonnu Smith spiked the ball right at Juan Thornhill's feet, and they got into a scrap. Juan Thornhill rips off his helmet. It was getting nasty. Jalen Ramsey, there was a drill where they were working on just press at the line of scrimmage on the receivers, and like Jalen Ramsey is just like, everyone get out the way, I'm gonna do this right now. And he takes on Calvin Austin, shuts him down, and then he points at Rock Taylor and he says something. I'm like, this is Rock Taylor, an undrafted free agent, and Jalen Ramsey's like, I don't care, I don't like you, and he's just talking. He wants all the smoke, and it is a lot of fun. And so Aaron Rodgers,
okay, real quick, I'm sorry, because the Rodgers answer is good, and I love it, but no, this is me interrupting you. Let's be clear on that. Are they? And this is tough, like tangibly to wrap your arms around, but I feel like you watch the Steelers against the Ravens, and there's schematic issues and there's personnel issues, but Kirk Herbstreit called them out because there wasn't an edge. They're not playing with an edge. They're laying down and just basically taking what Derrick Henry was giving to them. Are you seeing an edge that's different than you've seen from previous Steelers defenses and all the time you've been covering camp?
I am, Adam. Everyone is scrapping. I mean, even Brandon Echols, who right now is probably the fourth string cornerback, when he's out there and he like breaks up a pass, he points right to the receiver he guarded, and he's like, bleep you. Like he's coming after it. And everybody has that attitude. And I think Jalen Ramsey honestly added to it. And there was an emphasis to do it, I think, even without him, to be like this. There was an intensity that they wanted to have, and the defensive front was going to have that. But I think Jalen Ramsey, and I talked about this in today's Locked On Steelers episode, I think he's setting up to be like the ultimate villain. Like TJ Watt is a villain, but he's a nice villain to the teams he plays. Like he'll make the play, but he doesn't call you all sorts of things outside of what your mama called you. You know, he comes out and he'll be, gentlemanly after he sacks you and celebrate with his team and, do a couple things. Jalen Ramsey will talk about you, your mama, everything about you after he beats you up on the field. That is the identity that I think a lot more of the Steelers are taking on. There is an edge, and I do think that that is going to play a factor this year.
What have you seen from Roman Wilson and or Calvin Austin III?
I'd still say Calvin Austin is ahead of Roman Wilson, but I will say Roman Wilson had his best day yesterday. He went one-on-one against Joey Porter Jr., and he skied up and took the ball off of Joey. Joey got his hand on the ball, but Roman Wilson was able to pluck it out the air, even did the I'm on your head celebration afterwards. He's been solid, and that was back-to-back days where Roman Wilson caught my eye for doing good things as a wide receiver. So I think he's on the up-and-up, but I'd still place him behind Calvin Austin and, maybe Robert Woods, because Robert Woods is still a good veteran who could do a lot of things right. But Roman Wilson's a very willing blocker, and I think that's going to get him more reps because when they're doing the blocking drills, he's throwing his body at it. And so it's important to note the intensity part that I was talking about. The offense has it too. Like they're fighting back just as much as the defense is fighting them. So but Roman Wilson's doing well, and Calvin Austin, I think he continues to be a really sharp guy. He's gone at it with Jalen Ramsey a lot because he's beaten Jalen Ramsey on a couple underneath routes with his ability to separate. And so Jalen Ramsey's still the much better player and still wins the majority of those. But when there was one time, I think it was
you have
Sunday.
No idea what day it is. You have no clue.
Yeah. Actually, it's tough to remember. But it was Sunday. Austin caught a pass. The pads aren't even on. He gets up and he pushes Jalen Ramsey, and Jalen Ramsey gets in his face, and they got to get separated. But Calvin Austin, I think he is growing through the trial by fire that is Jalen Ramsey.
Man, the classic iron sharpens iron, Doran. You love to hear it.
I love it. Chris, real quick, who's one rookie that has shown up in practice?
I'll say Derek Harmon was showing up really well before the pads went on. They've only had one pad at practice. He didn't turn my head. The guy that has really surprised me with how much he continues to show up is Y.A. Black. He is, when the pads weren't on, he was swatting passes at the line of scrimmage. When the pads were on, he is just moving guys. Now, granted, he's playing second team defense against the second team offense, but I expected him to be the sixth defensive tackle. He might be the fourth or fifth, right now. And he might be a good fourth or fifth. Part of the problem with the Ravens too was they didn't have guys behind the Cam Hayward, Keanu Benton, that they could trust to come in and be physical. Now they do. Dan Aquale looks solid. Y.A. Black looks really good. I think that he is really impressed me. Caleb Johnson's impressed me with his vision and his ability to run. He needs to work on his pass protection still. But if I chose a rookie that surprised me most, it's Y.A. Black.
All right. Chris, Broderick Jones. Talk Broderick Jones to us. I know that he was in individual drills the last couple of days. What's the status on him from an injury standpoint? Do you expect him to practice tonight? And what have you seen out of him thus far?
I mean, I've seen him miss when the pads weren't on and not be as solid there. But as I talk with Matt Williamson about this, is like being an offensive lineman when the pads aren't on is one of the toughest things to do, because now these guys, there's nothing to grab onto, to hold onto. The shoulder pads are such a big part of targeting your hands to block somebody. So it's tough to really evaluate that. And he hasn't been available to really watch since last Saturday. So, will he practice tonight? I hope he does, because it'd be nice to see him in pads. But the last 2 days, I thought he looked fine. I think what they're doing, though, is they're taking it easy with these soft tissue injuries. They're not trying to put themselves in a position. Roman Wilson, in fact, said, with his injury, he rushed himself back because he wanted to be back. And that was what messed him up and kept him out for the rest of the season. I think they want to avoid that with Broderick Jones right now. So will we see him tonight? Your guess is as good as mine. But I know that Broderick Jones wants to be back out there. When I see him in the individual drills, he does get after it. He's eager to prove that he's ready this year.
We heard that Caleb Johnson had a rough day, first day of pads. Are you worried about that, or is it just kind of like rookie rust that he needs to knock off?
The main thing he struggled with is backs on backers, which he admitted like before. And he's like, I'm excited to do this because he never really did that before. The Steelers set him up for failure. They put him up against Malik Harrison, who is this big body, I'm going to crush the running back type of guy. And every time Caleb Johnson was just couldn't get his hands inside of Malik Harrison. And if you can't get your hands inside of a bigger man, he is going to destroy you. And that's just what happened. And I will say this, Caleb Johnson, he showed the spirit that you want, because he lost the first rep and the second rep solidly. Like he was, it was a no question who won that. And then he was like, no, I won a third rep. I got to do this. And he came back. Malik Harrison was like, all right. And he still lost it, but he's showing good fight there. Now, when it comes to the other parts of the game, running the football, he does that pretty well. When he gets a hole, he hits it. I like his vision. We got to see it through more extended periods. We will do that tonight because they will be in full pads. But tonight will be a big night for Caleb Johnson. The biggest thing he struggled with is pass protection right now.
Chris, this was wonderful. Yep. It always is, man. We love doing these on Fridays. I know you are. I mean, you are out there just sweating football. And tonight's a great thrill. I mean, when you're out there covering, you play, you're tired and all that. When you're out there covering it, you're just standing there sweating, and there's no pads yet. So you have one day in pads. Friday Night Lights is always something to look forward to. You get on the bus, and you have all the people waving their terrible towels all around Latrobe. It's an awesome thing. I urge Steelers fans out there, too, if you've never been, put it on your Steelers bucket list. It's super cool. So thank you for coming on. Excited that you're going to have that to break camp up tonight, and we'll talk to you next week, Chris.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, Chris.
See you, buddy. Chris Carter. Iron sharpens iron, Norm.
It sure does.
And they're out there fighting. I like that.
Yeah.
I like that.
Mike Tomlin likes that.
Oh, he loves that. Wolf used to say, like, he would always give the young offensive linemen advice, like when they were coming into camp for the first time, go pick some big dude and fight him and get the coach's attention. And then Chuck Noll would get all mad that they fought.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You go in there, you fight a guy. You want to get noticed, you go fight a guy. Then Noll would be pissed that he was fighting. That they were fighting guys.
I like that this team is showing a little edge, though, too. And especially the new guys. It's more of the new guys. It's more of the Juan Thornhills, the Jonnu Smith, the Jalen Ramsey. Those are the guys that are calling people out. And that's exactly what the Steelers need. They need those type of players that come in here and change the culture a little bit of what has been going on in the last couple of years.
Dude, that's well said.
They're changing the culture. Just by and they're successful players that have played at a high level. Jonnu Smith being one of the better tight ends last year, having the best year of his career. Jalen Ramsey, Super Bowl champion, and I know Darius Slay it has that edge to him as well. So these new guys that they've acquired not only bring the skill, but they're bringing that edge that I think that Mike Tomlin and the Pittsburgh Steelers have missed and are looking for.
I'm with you, and again, tangible, intangible, what does it all mean? Are they going to win more games? Are they going to win a playoff game? How's it all end? But you're right. Super Bowl champion Darius Slay and Jalen Ramsey's won a championship. And these guys don't screw around. And that edge, I will not get it out of my mind the way Kirk Herbstreit talked about the Steelers.
Yeah.
That hasn't happened. Now, all these playoff failures, you have a national broadcaster, a respected one at that, in Kirk Herbstreit saying they're pretty much laying down for the hated Baltimore Ravens. That cannot stand. And you might lose, fine. Lose with dignity, dang it. I like it.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I interrupted Chris. I shouldn't interrupt. I should let him finish. But that perked my ears up.
Yes.
Yeah. Tweet us, brought to you by South Hills Kia, Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. And you can text us, brought to you by Edgar Snyder and Associates, a personal injury law firm, where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. Texter writes in, today's show just shows how dumb you guys are that you toe the company line really well. You actually thought the Pirates would do something? Ha, 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 ha. I don't know how anybody could listen to the first 2+ hours of today's radio program and think for a second that we're towing any kind of company line. I think that is as absurd a critique as there ever possibly could be. I'm trading Paul Skeens. I traded Skeens earlier in the show.
I'm literally crying.
Harry choked up during the pre-show, towing the company line. What is the company line? What are they trying to do?
Do I sound happy to you? Do we sound happy to you? No.
No, and you've got a girlfriend, you're looking for an apartment, you've got 3 cars, you're in the prime of your life. 2025 is the year of Harry.
Not the year of the Pirates, though, it seems.
Certainly not.
Nope.
So we'll get into it a little bit more coming up next. We've got Noah Hyles at the bottom of the hour, who, I mean, a round of applause for Noah Hyles, who I think crushed this trade deadline. Noah Hyles has been all over the trade deadline for the Post-Gazette. He's going to join us coming up in 12 minutes live from Denver. Unconfirmed reports that he might have got into some substances out there that are legal that are not legal here. Unconfirmed reports. But we're not going to ask him about that. I can't get over something that's really ironic here, Doran, with what happened yesterday. So Ben Cherington trades Bailey Falter for a 4A pitcher who has pitched 5 games in the majors this season, who's, what, 28 years old, and for a prospect who's not among the top 30 prospects of the Royals, a guy that won't be here if he pans out until, like, 2028. He trades David Bednar for the Yankees' 8th and 14th best prospects. Horrific trades. The Bailey Falter deal to get him to Pittsburgh was one of the best trades that Charrington's made, and the Bednar trade to get him to Pittsburgh. Those might be the only two good Charrington trades.
Mm-hmm.
He flips Rodolfo Castro for Bailey Falter, who's been a really good pitcher for the Bucks these 2 years. And in the Joe Musgrove trade, David Bednar comes back, and he's been a two-time All-Star, and this was an All-Star caliber season. So your best two trades you have now undone, and you probably got lesser pieces back in return than what you gave up.
What you gave up, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Musgrove wound up being really good, so I guess that's not true in the Bednar deal. But like Rodolfo Castro, I probably felt better about him at the time than I do about either of the players that you got back for Bailey Falter.
Yep.
And so it's an obvious question here, and we're going to have to ask this of Noah, but like, what will become of Ben Cherington? The owner once stepped in to stop Ben Cherington from trading the hometown David Bednar. He has now allowed a guy in year 6 to trade the hometown guy in David Bednar. Does this mean that he'll be back next year? Or because of the perceived failures at the deadline yesterday, does this mean it's a sure thing he's gone? I don't know. I mean, I'm licking my finger. I'm trying to figure out which way the wind's blowing on this thing, but he had full freedom to do clearly whatever it is that he wanted to do yesterday. And you get 7 position players. None of them have ever played a big league game. So does this mean that because of the full freedom he's back? Or does this mean because he bombed so badly here and he's getting F minuses all across Major League Baseball that he's a sure thing to be gone? I don't know.
I have no idea. I have no idea what this means for him. I have no idea if. I really don't.
It's very weird, isn't it?
Very weird, because it wouldn't make sense to move on from him, but let him do this, or even let him, you know, stay in his seat since Shelton got let go. Like, none of it makes sense if they were to let him go next week.
And the scouting coordinator gets to do the draft. And by all accounts, A-plus draft this year. Weren't able to get that second-round pick signed, which is a big swing and a miss. But by all accounts, good draft this year. Connor Griffin last year. Could that guy not have just been the GM since Derek Shelton got fired? Right. And even if you're not going to give that guy the opportunity to make trades yesterday at the deadline, I think you're positioned in a better place for 2026. Like, if Ben Cherington was encapsulated in carbonite a la Han Solo yesterday and could literally do nothing, I think the Pirates are better positioned for next year.
Yes.
Like, hang on to Bailey Falter.
Yes.
You hang on to Keller. You hang on to Bednar. And if you want to trade guys in the offseason, you're going to be able to get big league bats, you would think, easier than you are now. But even still, Ben Cherington spoke last night. Our very own Jeff Hathorn was there, and he said, oh, well, wait, I could have gotten big league bats.
We could have acquired proven major league bats. Absolutely. There are opportunities on the table for us. We could have done it, just not at a price we were comfortable with. So I think we just got to carry that into the offseason. I think we know a lot more about how teams are thinking about their own players and thinking about our prospects or just players in general. And we're just going to have to dive back into that in November.
A little advice for our friend, Ben. I wouldn't have said that out loud.
Man. We could have gotten major league bats, just not at the price that we were comfortable with. Wow.
If he does get let go, and I'm going to capitalize the I and the F.
Hold on. Go ahead. I mean, could he be meaning like, okay, like, you know, teams wanted O'Neill Cruz, and that's the price? I mean, I'm not trying to give him the benefit of the doubt, but, like, what was the price? Like, was it you don't want to let go Mitch Keller?
My educated guess is, 5.5 years West Virginia dorm, that teams that are rebuilding, that were comfortable giving up big league players, we're looking for prospects in return. And I don't think Cherington was comfortable giving up prospects.
Wow.
They didn't move any prospects. How do you not go into the deadline yesterday thinking we're going to act like buyers based on where he is in his career arc with the Pirates and based on where they are in the Paul Skeens era? How do you not go into it as a buyer? You can artfully do both at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But clearly, the reports leading up to the deadline were the Cubs were comfortable moving off of a bat like Owen Casey. Okay, and that's a buyer willing to give up a prospect. Can you not make something happen there? How about a team like the Guardians? And I think we may just be scratching the surface on their whole gambling thing over there. Who knows what's going to become of the Guardians and their pitching staff these next few years? I don't know anything. I'm just wondering aloud. Stephen Kwan's on the market. Like, they're not going to pay him. How do you not package some prospects and think, hey, let's make a run at this and see what we could do there and buy and sell at the same time, all trying to accomplish the stated goal of being better next year? Let's get Noah's thoughts on this coming up next, because that's a good question. And I'm sure he can provide some context. We got a lot to cover with Noah, so let's get to him. All right, let's get right to it. Noah Hyles in Denver. The Pirates taking on the worst team in Major League Baseball starting tonight. They've won 8 out of 9. Who cares? Let's get to the deadline. Noah, thank you for joining us. I know it's early out there. Denver, great town, great place. Give us a grade on Ben Cherington's performance yesterday.
F. I have nothing else. I mean, that was a failure. That didn't go well. It was bad.
What hurts the most, do you think?
Worse than bad. To hear him say they moved Bailey Falter to clear a roster spot for young pitching, and then for him to follow up and say, after moving Bailey Falter, it didn't make any sense to move Andrew Heaney, who is a worse pitcher than Bailey Falter, who's older than Bailey Falter, and who has no club control remaining after this season. Guys, this was an organization that last year DFA'd two veterans in the final week of the season to create playing time opportunities for younger players. One of them happened to have an incentive bonus coming up, but it wasn't for that. It wasn't for that. It was to create playing time for younger players. And now, for 2 months, we're going to have three guys, all in their 30s, all on expiring contracts, taking reps from younger players. Tommy Pham got traded twice last year. He's a better player this year. Couldn't find a way to move him. IKF, Andrew Heaney. These are guys that are playoff regulars. Couldn't move them. This is the same GM, by the way, that put Austin Hedges on a World Series winning baseball team 2 years ago. Couldn't move IKF. No value there. I just don't get it, man. It was bad. F.
Noah, they could have gotten bigger name players, but weren't comfortable with the price tag. Your reaction to that?
Oh, on Bednar?
Yes.
Yeah. I talked with people in the front office for two different teams that were finalists for Bednar. I won't reveal those teams, but they were heavily interested in him going down to the final couple of days. They ended up both getting different relievers. The price, the asking price, originally told to me by both teams, was a top five prospect at minimum. I reported that. Yesterday morning, they both told me they expected David Bednar to net, at minimum, a top 75 prospect in baseball. Two separate people, two separate organizations, two separate leagues, one in the National League, one in the American League. These people don't know each other. This was just overwhelmingly similar info. The Pirates had their asking price. I know some of the players they asked about. They are all better than what they got from the New York Yankees. I don't think Flores, I don't think he's like going to be a bad player. I just don't think he is the best player they could have got for a two-time All-Star closer who's putting up really good numbers. And to go a little bit further now on that, he's now their second most important hitting prospect in the system behind Connor Griffin. Because this is a guy that you need to be on your opening day roster next year.
Yeah.
And if he's not, that's a problem. Fans are going to let him hear it. They're going to let the Pirates hear it. And let's go the other route, though. If he is, where's he playing?
What are you platooning him with Horwitz?
He plays first base and he plays catcher. Those are two positions that you've made heavy investments in. At catcher, you have a 1-1 pick. You have a former top 100 prospect. And then at first base, you have a guy that was your biggest move of all last offseason. Oh, or is he just going to chase Kutch out of the building and be the DH? Those are your three options.
No, you're just cooking right now.
Mm-hmm.
He's just cooking right now.
Mm-hmm.
Noah, the Pirates, once Pham, IKF, Heaney are off the books, plus the money that they cleared up with the deals that they made yesterday, and guys like Andrew McCutchen and Baruchy and others, all told, $41 million thereabouts could come off the payroll. So is that money, do you think, going to be reinvested into the team? That would be the defense if I'm Ben Cherington. Hey, this is what we're trying to do. Is that how you read his comments yesterday? And do you expect for that to happen?
I asked him. I said, is it fair to assume you guys are going to be a bigger player in free agency this year? Because everything else is aligned. You know what? Because their logic was rebuild the farm, create open spaces for younger players who might be here now or who won't be here now but could be acquired in the offseason. And they did that. They're going to have open spots in the rotation for Bubba Chandler, Yoan Oviedo, Hunter Barco. They're going to have their spots when Heaney is inevitably placed on waivers here soon because they couldn't trade him. And like they have an opening at third. They have openings in the corner outfield spots. Like they have those openings, and they added more depth to their farm. So they maybe could trade some other prospects. They could trade a Thomas Harrington, a Tamar Johnson. They could move these guys now because they have other depth in their farm system because of these moves. But they got to spend. If they don't spend, then it doesn't matter. It cannot just be reallocating $41 million. A win is valued at $8 million on Fangraphs. They are not 5 war away from being a playoff team. A 1-5 war player makes them significantly better. But 5 collective war doesn't change a whole heck of a lot for this team. It just doesn't. So you need to spend more than that. And I asked about that. And the response I got was one similar to what we get every time we ask about spending in free agency. It's an important part. But at the end of the day, we've got to be better at development and we've got to be better at getting good trade returns. Okay.
Noah, Skeens has been outspoken lately. He talked to Zangrilli the other day and he was outspoken. How do you think his reaction is to all of this the next time he probably speaks or is asked about the trade deadline? What do you think his reaction is?
I don't know. I don't want to put words in the guy's mouth. I won't just speak for Paul. I mean, every person I've talked to about the Pirates' activities yesterday was confused. Agents, people I know who work for other teams, people within the own organization were texting me saying, what the hell is going on? Family members of players asking me what is going on. I would have to assume that line of thinking applies to people in the clubhouse too. I mean, David Bednar was a very popular teammate. And if he was moved for a guy that they thought aligned with the goal, which would get better for 2026, if David Bednar brought in, you know, a guy who is a top 100 prospect or someone with a little bit more of a big league established pedigree, I think people would have been understanding. But when you look around and you see what people who are just as good as David Bednar brought in return, some guys with less control, some guys with more control.
No, I'm going to
know how Paul Skeens or anyone else would feel about that.
Probably not good. No, I'm going to ask you the hardest question that I've ever asked you because of the stipulation I'm going to put on it. One word, do you think Charrington's back next year or not?
No. I mean,
but are you okay? So I lied. Are you confident in that? No, because I look at yesterday and clearly he had a ton of freedom to do whatever it was that he wanted to do. But by all accounts out there, except for Jim Bowden, who gave him a B minus, they did a terrible job. He did a terrible job. Like I don't come away from this feeling strong one way or another, whether the guy's going to be back or not.
All of the moves he made indicates that he's running the offseason. He like said, I don't have the quote verbatim in front of me, but like one of the first answers he gave us was essentially this was phase one of the plan. And like phase two is reinvesting that money and making other trades this offseason, trading prospects, maybe trading Mitch Keller. in filling other positions through that payroll they have to use now. So, I think he is operating under the assumption of that he'll be back.
Yeah. Noah, this was wonderful. You kind of went with your Barack Obama cadence today. Mm-hmm. I mean, very long pauses. It's been a very long couple of weeks for you, and you're out on the West Coast, and you're waking up early. The information, great, as always. Get some slumber, pal, and we will talk to you soon, and we'll continue to read you in the Post-Gazette.
Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Noah.
See you, Noah. That was really good stuff from Noah.
Yeah.
Everybody he talked to was confused.
Everybody. Even people within the organization.
Yeah, we got to get more into that coming up next. Jason Mackey's going to join us from 9 o'clock until 10. He really did have the pause game working hard today. Noah did.
Man.
Yeah. Let's get to it when we come back. 50-minute mark on the Fan, brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, Route 19 in Peters Township. Good morning, everybody. Jason Mackey going to join us from 9 o'clock until 10. Great stuff from Noah Hiles. And someone on the text line writes, I just started listening to the show today. What's going on with Harry? Oh, he's just a Pirates fan. He's just waking up like everyone else is waking up today. That's what's going on with Harry. Noah Hiles, man, bringing it. Bringing it. Wasn't bringing the energy, and no one blames him, but bringing the good stuff. Saying he had multiple sources in different leagues telling him yesterday morning that they were convinced that David Bednar was going to yield a top 75 prospect in all of Major League Baseball. And what did they get for him? They got the 8th rated prospect in the Yankees system. Reliever goes to Philadelphia. Duran, 2 top 100 prospects. The Pirates' ask on Bednar was at least a top 75 prospect, and you get a guy who's played 10 games in AAA that's not even a top 100 prospect in the sport and 8th in the weak Yankees farm system. I mean, that is... it's unfathomable.
It's crazy.
See, you did that on purpose.
Yes.
Also, and I think the money line, maybe the entire discussion with Noah was, everybody I talked to about the Pirates' activity yesterday was confused. People within the organization, players in the clubhouse, family members of players, sources from around the league. And we've had a lot of people reach out today and say, guys, why are you surprised? Well, I went into this thinking I was going to be underwhelmed. We talked about that a bunch. But the general manager has said that the goal is to be better in 2026. And I at least thought that we would see his version of whatever that looked like. I don't think we did. This was a rudderless, directionless deadline day with 7 hitters acquired, none of whom who have played Major League Baseball. Most of them have never played AA ball. I thought we might get a Horowitz kind of move. Like, that would be a return. Oh, this is an upgrade on paper. It'll make us better. It'll make us score more runs. But we would all be underwhelmed with the caliber of player, but at least it would be a big league guy. We didn't even get that, man. And the Falter thing. I don't believe it. I do not believe it. A guy who's pitched 5 games and who's 28, and a prospect that won't see the light of day until 2028. And Noah's right. These are the moves of a general manager who thinks he'll be here.
Yes.
To do phase 2 of the plan.
Yes.
That's what he said. Oh, phase 1.
We're in like phase 7 now for talking years. I mean,
buddy, it's year 6.
Rinse, repeat.
We're in phase 1 of our year 6 plan.
Wash, rinse, repeat. Prospects.
What? And again, prospects would have been fine if they're top 100 prospects.
Yes.
If they're prospects knocking down the door that were being held back in other organizations, that's not what happened. Like, the closest guy to the majors is the catcher from the Yankees, Rafael Flores, who has, again, played 10 games of AAA baseball.
But just like Noah said, where is he going to play if he is up?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what he said, right?
Yeah, he did, yeah.
What, is he going to platoon with Horowitz? Is he going to play catcher?
Dude, Dude, if your big, quote-unquote, big move is a platoon guy with the other failed trade acquisition.
Platoon guy with, you know, that only has 10 appearances.
Yep. All right. We asked this question earlier, sort of tongue-in-cheek, but what's the higher likelihood? Rafael Flores being on the opening day roster next year or Ben Cherington being the GM next year? 412-928-9370. Jason Mackey, he wrote a column on all this, obviously. He's going to be joining us for the next hour. Also, Terry McLaurin on the trade block has requested a trade from the Commanders. Might the Steelers put their irons in the fire to try to get their number two wide receiver? We'll get to that as well in the 9 o'clock hour. First, though, Fan Weather is brought to you by Myers Law Group, Pittsburgh's choice for affordable legal solutions. Today, high of 79. It's also the last year the Pirates won the World Series. Low of 59, clear sky. Should be a beautiful day and night for the Friday Night Lights Steelers practice in Latrobe. Quit laughing, Harry. There's nothing funny going on here.
I'm going nuts.